Welcome to Making Coffee, a behind-the-scenes look at what goes into making one of the world's favorite beverages. I'm your host, Lucia Solis, a former winemaker turned coffee processing specialist. Thanks for joining this week's episode.
Hello, friends, and welcome to episode 55. Today, I bring you a conversation with an extraordinary producer, Ronnie. And I don't use this word lightly. Ronnie is a truly exceptional person and my new coffee crush. I met her because she was the only woman who attended FTC. And you guys, each previous FTC, there has been a minimum 50% female quota. And this has been really important to me because there are so many coffee spaces that are still very male dominated. And I'm also sorry to be talking about it in such binary ways. I hope that if you're listening and non-binary, know that you are very welcome in our camps. I'm just using male and female as a shorthand to illustrate a point. The upcoming FTC in December in Guatemala is shaping up to be 65% female. During our plan for FTC Indonesia, I handed over many of the logistics to the Bandung Coffee Exchange team. It was only after 23 tickets were sold that I looked at the roster and saw 22 males and one single female. I thought this might make Ronnie a bit shy, but I couldn't have been more wrong. Every day during class time, she was always sitting in the front row. During processing, she was by my side getting her hands in the tank. She raised her hands a lot. She asked a lot of questions and shared her experiences. She fully took advantage of our time together. During the week, after processing and class time, we sit around the fire and just hang out. While most of the group was relaxing, Ronnie was still working. She brought her kids and her fire starter briquettes that you'll hear her talk about in this episode, and she just started making snacks for everyone. She was grilling bananas and just feeding everybody, which was amazing and just above and beyond. So that gives you kind of an idea of who Ronnie is. You can tell this is an intelligent woman with good instincts. I know she can express herself better in Indonesian, yet I am so grateful that she makes the effort to share in English so we can all benefit from her experience. It can be really difficult to put yourself out there in a new language, and I really admire Ronnie for being so outgoing. And this interview, or this conversation, is important to me because if you're a longtime listener, you will have heard me say several times that one of my pet peeves is talking about producers instead of talking to them. And I felt like I was doing that. I felt like I was talking too much about producers and that I could use this podcast differently. However, I have a little challenge with that because I think interviewing skills are very underrated and I don't consider myself a good interviewer because I listen to other podcasts with people who are trained journalists, so I know what a good interviewer sounds like. For example, one podcast I never miss is 10% Happier with Dan Harris. And Dan is a professional journalist whose interviewing skills are absolutely brilliant. So personally, I feel most comfortable when I can take a topic and sit in my cave and stew for a while and eventually word vomit something into the microphone. It's a very slow and solitary process. So I've had quite the tension between wanting the podcast to involve a lot more voices and my personal recluse tendencies. Fortunately, the people I get to talk to are really, really cool, so I think that my lack of interviewing skills is not a huge deterrent. Just as a heads up, in the beginning of our conversation, Ronnie shares a little bit about her past sexual abuse, in case that's a trigger for you. But later on in the conversation, she mentions that working in coffee is her healing, and listening to that part during the editing process made me tear up a little bit. It was important for her to work with women so that they can have economic opportunities outside the home, and you'll hear how she has gone about recruiting women in her village. One last note before we get started. In the conversation, Ronnie mentions Leo and Lisa a couple of times. I met Leo and Lisa briefly when they came to my Worms and Germs seminar in 2019 during the Boston SCA Expo. Leo and Lisa began their business in 2010. They have an organic coffee farm, a macadamia orchard, a wet mill facility, and an ecotourism farm stay lodge, as well as a coffee processing education center in North Sumatra. I have linked their webpage in the show notes. One last bit of housekeeping before we get started. Just a reminder that our next fermentation camp in December in Antigua is sold out. But if you email info.luciacoffee@gmail.com, you can be put on the wait list and know when the next spots open up for our future FTC, which is potentially at the end of February 2024. You can find more details on the fermentation camps on my website at lucia.coffee.
Dani, welcome to Making Coffee Podcast. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Lucia.
So I wanted to ask you, what does Java Halu, where does that name come from?
Java Halu is, Java is from West Java. And then Halu is from Halu Mountain, because we start plant the coffee tree in Halu Mountain in West Bandung, West Java. And then coffee, because we are focused in coffee. So I name it Java Halu Coffee, to remember when we start and to remember when we're from.
To remember where you're from. Lovely. So did you always know you wanted to be a coffee producer? Is this in your family? Are you multi-generational?
No, this is my accident.
Your accident. Tell us what happened.
My accident, yeah. When I was 16, my father is an artist. Mm-hmm. My brother also. So we family artists make some handicraft, but the handicraft is American Indian art. I'm not interested to make some art, some handicraft, but I'm more interested how to sell it. So when I'm 16, I'm already can sell the product to California and to Sweden. Start from there, I become a learn and love business, and then we up and down, and then
wait. Let's back up. When did this happen? So around what year?
Around 1997.
1997. You started to sell
the
art craft,
the art craft to America.
And how did you even start that?
Yeah, first because my father.
This was before websites, right? You didn't have.
Yeah, before website, before email.
Yeah, before email.
Before email. The government has a program that's called an exhibition export product in Jakarta. So I joined that program because I'm the younger. So the government helped me to bring some translator. There is a lot of foreign buyer come. And then I have the first buyer from there. So they come to my gallery, to my workshop. And then they bring another buyer. So I become a famous at that time. But business is up and down, so the trend is changes. So I have several business I changes. And then when I have a huge bankrupt of my business, I realized that I must back to Bandung before I in Jakarta. And I think that I must live in village. So I choose to plant something, but in Halu Mountain, there is a coffee trees, and then a lot of coffee trees, but a lot of farmers want to sell it because they protest how to increase the production and how to sell it this coffee, because the price of coffee cherry is very cheap in that time. Mm-hmm. The first I know the coffee is that time.
Were you already married at this point when you made the switch to coffee?
I already married twice, because my first marriage is horrible. My first marriage is I have a horrible memory. Mm-hmm. I have a sexual abuse. I have a verbal abuse. So I have a bad memory of that. So I tried to move to Jakarta. I born in Bandung. I tried to move to Jakarta, and I tried to live with to fulfill my day with work with another business. So, but there is okay outside, but not okay inside.
Yeah.
Now, when I start with my second husband, I want to start with new life. So in coffee, I think it's my healing, and then it's like how we balancing the life, business, and spiritual for me. Mm-hmm. Ah, like that.
So forgive my ignorance of religion, but as a Muslim woman, was it difficult for you to get that first divorce?
Oh, it's very difficult. It's very difficult. I think not just as Muslim, but being Indonesian, a woman is very hard for us, because there is still far for the gender balance.
Equality.
Yeah, equality. There is even... I think most of Indonesian women has abuse, has bad memory just for people who she loves. Yeah. And then a lot of Indonesian women, special in my village in Halumonte, it's hard to find some good education. It's hard to find some fair information. And it's hard to find some good work, good job. They must go to another country, become like workers that dangerous for her. But the economic push her to do that. Mm-hmm. So I think I must learn, I must know, and I must live with them so I know what kind the motivation to push them, leave their child, leave their family, leave their husband to just find some money for their life. When 40 years old, the woman of Indonesia who worked in the foreign must be back home because they cannot work anymore and that age.
After 40?
After 40.
Why?
That's the rule when women work in the outside of Indonesia. Oh. They're not productive anymore. So they don't want how to start again their life. They not have skill for like being a business girl. That not have skill for live in village as a farmer. So I start to empower them to join with this coffee activity, like sort the cherry, like pick the harvest with hand picking, and then like...
So this is the training that you're doing to the women that work at Java Halu. But I'm still so surprised that you don't come from a coffee background. You don't have a coffee family. You were a business lover. You really enjoyed the selling and kind of that... Yeah, that business component. And then you got into coffee. And like you said, information is very difficult to come by in general, just for coffee.
Yeah.
But how, where did you start?
I start in the same time in 2013. I start open a specialty coffee shop in Bandung. I learn barista class. I learn about latte art, espresso, blending and everything, cupping. I learned in Jakarta, and then I start with my small knowledge. I opened the coffee shop, and then the coffee shop is going good. And then in 2019, I learned in the Q grader class. But the funny way, when I learned in that Q grader class, all the stage I pass, but only the general, except I'm not passed because my English is not understand about what is the English way in the coffee industry. I don't understand. But
so language held you back in that last part?
Yeah. Different kind of English in coffee industry. Like there is a lot of thing about the coffee. And then after that, I focus in my farming. And then when I first
harvest... Wait, hold on. So you started working in a coffee shop or you opened a coffee
shop? Opened a coffee shop.
You educated yourself about all of the steps of having a good shop and all of your kind of brewing and roasting, and you became a Q grader.
Choose some machinery.
Choose a machinery.
And then manage the employee, manage the money and everything, promotion and everything. So.
And then you decided you wanted to go closer to the source and you wanted to have farming.
Yeah.
So how did you start? Did you buy land? Did you rent? How did that process go?
In Indonesia, most of farmers is borrowed land from the government. Name is Perhutani, in the forest, like you see before. There's a land is owned by government, but we can use that for the coffee farm.
So you rented a certain how much space?
1 hectare first.
You started with 1 hectare.
I love the plants. I love the flowers. I love the vegetable. I love all the plants. I love organic plants. So this 1 hectare, I designed become with a good shade, with a refugia flower. I love sunflower, so I plant sunflower for the barrier, and I plant all the flower. It's the
in the rows.
Yeah. So
so you started with 1 hectare that you were renting.
With 1 hectare, and then
how are you processing that coffee?
just natural cleansing.
Natural, okay.
Natural without pre-cleaning, without floating. Just pick the red cherry and then
on the floor?
No, on the rice bed.
On the rice bed.
Because I know in the two-grade class. But the processing knowledge is very zero.
Mm-hmm.
Start 2019, I saw in the Instagram that Lisa and Leo Organic Farm in Sumatra have a processing class. So I started learn from them. And then they teach me a lot how we design the processing with effective and efficient way and with low investment. Design your resources, not see another washing station.
Right. Work with what you have.
Yes.
With your reality.
Yes.
So you started with the 1 hectare just doing basic and natural.
Yes.
And then you learned much more going to these courses. So what are you working with today? How much land do you have now? And do you buy from neighbors?
Yes. I have 12 hectares.
12, okay.
4 hectares my own land. And then the rest is the government land, like before in the forest. And then I have 80 family of farmers. I co-op with them. I make a community. And all total, our production is 60 hectares. 60 hectares, it's produced 3 to 4 kilos of coffee cherry. Since 5 years ago, I campaigned to my farmers that you don't need to plant in the forest. You can plant in your own land behind your whole house, so you don't need to leave your family too far or too long. Somebody left me about this. How come you plant the coffee beside your home? Because coffee near sand, near everything. I measure the area that I live is 1,350 altitude. Mm-hmm. So I think it's good for Arabica, and I start plant in our own land. But 5 years ago, we can compare. The tree in the forest, one tree just produced 200 grams each harvest. Our trees is 3 to 4 kilos.
Wow.
So now, everybody try plant in the day on land.
Right, because having one tree at your house is like 8 trees in the forest, because you get so much more yield.
Yeah.
So as you were growing your business and as you were getting more land and learning more about coffee, tell me about your mill. How do you process coffee today? So you started with a natural process that you weren't even sorting, you were just drying.
Yeah.
What are your processes now? What did you change?
Yeah. First, I have a good design of my washing station, and then I measure where for the fermentation area, where for the pulper area, where for the waste area, drying area, storage area, and then office area, in small land, only 1,000 meter square.
So did you learn that design from your classes with Leo and Lisa, or did you design it yourself?
I designed myself. I saw Lisa and Leo design, and I draw in my book the small size day.
A mini version of
Lisa and Leo. So I said, why your drying like this? Lisa told me that because the sun come from this, and then how is hay? I measure everything.
How did you know to measure everything? How did you know to start looking at that?
Because when I was young, my father always did it. Before you doing something.
As an artist?
Yes.
Yeah.
Before you doing something, you don't just do it, but look at.
Observe.
Yeah, observe first.
Take notes,
and then adjust to your needed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you're right. If you don't measure something, you don't know if you're improving.
Yes.
So early on, you were taught that you don't just go forward. You pay attention, you observe, you take notes, and then you make improvements.
Yes.
Okay. So you were making improvements on your drying?
Yeah.
And then what happened?
In my drying, in my fermentation, I buy a lot of mineral gallons that contain 10 kilos of cherry. And then I labeling. I make first natural with submerged fermentation, dry fermentation, 12 hours, 35, 36 hours, 48. I have 100 gallons. Yeah, and then I labeling, and then I taking note.
Wait, so you had 100 different fermentations?
Different fermentation.
Going on at the same time, all 1 gallon?
Yes.
Okay.
Because I want measure in the same environment, in the same amount, mm-hmm. in the same time. And then after 100, I can, after that drying, after I cup it, mm-hmm. I can take note that I must take 3. Not me, but I calibrate with all my friends, my Q-grader friends.
Mm-hmm.
So that 3, I take only 1. And then I develop this one. And then I develop every harvest of this one of my fermentation. After the natural, I try with a wash, a double shock, wash double shock that Lisa teach me.
Mm-hmm.
Because my beans is high density, so I try to double wash the double shock the coffee, and then that's the first I know that wash coffee more than good activity of bacteria because when they submerge. And then I try with the sap starter.
Mm-hmm.
Sap is very sweet. It's a rich of glucose.
Mm-hmm.
So the
Did you measure the bricks of your sap?
Yeah, I measure the brick because I won't start with measure.
Mm-hmm.
So I can adjust if that I must increase or decrease. I'm a baker before.
You're a baker.
Yeah,
okay.
So I would like everything is measured and there is a note. So I know where is failed. I know where is to fix it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need to start again from zero like that. So first the sun and then fermentation and drying. And then after that, I decide again for the SOP, for the efficiency of works. Because my washing station is terracing land. So I try to use with a motorcycle to bring the coffee cherry to the drying area. If you come to my washing station, there is a label. This is area 1 for what, area 2, area 3, area 4. And then what happened in area 1, what happened in area 2. So if there is everybody come to my washing station, it's like a tour. It's like you can see where we can start when, and then what happened if we design the washing station like this.
Mm-hmm. So when did you move to thinking about zero waste?
Oh yeah, in my village there is a lot of processing, small processing like in Colombia. When we travel to, when we drive our car to washing station from our home, there is a lot of forest left and right. But when it's harvest season, the smell is terrible because there's a lot of coffee skin there.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of
rotting fruit. It smells
like
bad. It stinks.
They just
dump it.
Yeah, like that. First, when somebody asks me for cascarati, I don't agree cascarati because I see there is far away for hygienity. And then there is a low nutrition. So that is not my goal for think of my coffee waste become a cascara.
Right, because in Indonesia, the climate is very humid. So it's really hard to dry coffee. So
if
then you have to then dry cascara, you have to dry something else.
Yeah.
It's really difficult because of the mold issue. So it's not a good solution
for
cascara.
Yes.
So then you thought, I need to do something else.
Yes.
So where did the idea...
First, you know, back to the soil, back to the plantation, because I'm an organic farmers. I learned about to make some organic fertilizer that needed some animal for composting faster. There is a black soldier fly. Black soldier fly, they live only just for eat the compost, for break the compost. I tried break the compost with cascara, with bacteria, need 3 months to compost, to decompost that.
Mm-hmm. That's a long time.
Yeah, but with this, with black soldier fly, only take time 3 weeks and become 2 product. First compost, and the second is dry magofi.
Mm-hmm.
Why I call magofi? Because they 100% eat cascara. is Drima Govi is become money again. I sell to feeding the fish and the bird. That the first product of my waste, because it no need too long. Just take the fresh cascara and then chop it, because the larva is small.
Yeah, don't break it
down. Yeah, break it down. But when is larva getting big, you don't need to chop it anymore, but needs 3 weeks only.
Perfect. So I love the solution, because you had a problem of waste, you had the smell, you were trying to do something with, and then by using the black soldier fly, then you have two things. You're breaking down your material, so you have compost so that you're able to amend your soil,
yeah.
And the flies, as they're eating and breaking down, become maggots, and then they become food for something else.
Yes.
They said you feed it to your fish and you feed it to the birds.
Yes.
And they eat
that. And then this maggot is my control for environment. They don't love bad environment.
Mm-hmm.
If there is a black soldier fly, we as organic farmers is very happy. It's meaning that our environment is good.
So it's an indicator that it's a positive environment. If they're there, then it's healthy.
Yes.
And if they're not there, you know something's wrong.
Yes.
So then when did you move over to doing the briquettes?
Yeah. Then when we research about this magovi, it takes time, right?
Mm-hmm.
I put the magovi house near the cascara place, near the pulper area, and then here is a huler area, Haling. In Haling area, we have a house for the parchment. And then in my washing station, the weather is very cold, and I burn the fire pit with this parchment. And you know, it takes 2 days and 3 days still burning.
So there's a lot of energy.
Yeah, a lot of energy. So I think if this become a product, it can be. Because I know the process of the charcoal must be carbonization with pyrolysis system. But the difference only the base, only the product.
Mm-hmm.
This is from coconut shell. This is from parchment. So we try. That's why I, around 6 to 7 months, we try with a lot of way to make some carbonization, pyrolysis, and become a charcoal and become a fire starter. So now we have four products of our zero waste management. Magovi, compost from maggot, fire starter, and cascara. And you know, the good news is, start this October, the fire starter become export to Korea.
So you've turned your waste into 4 revenue opportunities,
yes.
4 more incomes,
yes.
That was just being thrown away.
Yes.
That's awesome.
And all that's doing with women.
Yeah. So tell me about, you employ 80% women.
Yes.
I
have 35 employee women in wet mill for picking, harvesting, for sorting, for drying, because my drying must be rotate every 1 hour or 2 hours. And then I have employed in my dry mill to sort the green bean, around 30 people.
And where do you find these women?
I just come to their house one by one.
So around your village?
Around my village.
You started going to their houses and, and recruiting.
Recruiting.
You say, I have this job. I want you to come work for me.
Yeah. Every Friday?
Uh-huh.
I asked them to come to my washing station just for it. We call him is ngaliwet. In Indonesia, it's ngaliwet. We add steamed rice with vegetable, with everything for free, and then so I can influence them. You can work with me. You don't need work until the end of day. You just work whatever you want. If you work until 1 hour, payment is like this.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to work until 5 hours, so the payment more.
And was that easy? Was it easy for you to convince them, or did you have to go to
not easy. Yeah, not easy.
So why were they resistant? What do you think was the hesitation?
Because building trust,
mm-hmm.
They need the building trust, because they always become a bad object. They the economic, they knowledge, and they what they is always become an object for poor. Not oh. What is called like poorness. Not poorness. Like yeah, they become a bad object. So when I come, they must know. They need clearly what my motivation to bring them to my community, to my washing station, to my business process. They don't believe in one discussion.
And why did you want, what did you tell them? Why did you want to work with only women? Why were you specifically recruiting women? Why didn't you just say, I need 10 workers and whoever they are?
Yeah.
That's it.
I tell to them about my story, like you asked to me before. And I tell to them that in the copy process need a patient, need attention, need heart to touch all the copy process. Because woman have all of it, and I need you. Somebody when feel needed, so they love it. I need you. I can do this business without you. I touch her heart, so they keep their heart.
That's beautiful. I really think that's true, that, you know, I think a lot of your success has come from getting bigger.
Yeah.
You know, and getting bigger, I mean being more inclusive, including more people in your vision.
Yeah.
And having that kind of path. I think that's really, really wonderful. I also wanted to ask you about creating civet coffee without animals.
Yeah. You know, Indonesian have a heritage coffee. There is kopi luwak or civet coffee. But it's said if you come to a huge cafe or a huge place that sow the luwak with the cream, they just put luwak in the box.
They put the animals in like a cage.
Yeah, like a cage. And then they feeding with a lot of coffee. You know, coffee for luwak is just snack, not the main course. If you eat 100% snack, so luwak can be died.
Yeah, it's not healthy.
It's hurt. It's not healthy for them. And then it become a normal because the industry need it. And then the next step is become a liar. They thought this is luwak, but it's not. Because for the demand of the coffee luwak, for the high prices. So
it's bad for two reasons. It's bad because it's animal abuse.
Yes.
And if it's not animal abuse, then it's also a fake product that they're trying to mimic and trick people.
Yes, I saw this practice. And then this happened a years. And then I find some friends in the university, Indonesia IPB, Indonesian University. There is a scientist and women, and I approach her because I know she start this science, this research from 2011, and I approach her, I talk to her that please, your science, your research, bring your research to the real world.
Take it out of the lab and put it on the farm. Make it practical.
Just not only to fulfill your patient, your article only. Yeah. Just please bring to us. Bring to real coffee industry. It's take 1 year. No, 2 years. I approach her. And then we start 3 years ago. He come to my washing station. He helped me. He can speak with me. We can discuss with her about my fermentation, about my starter, about all the things, because that is her professionality, her knowledge. And then we start with civet luwak without luwak, kopi luwak without luwak, because this is not past the book. We just design the environment like you explained in the class. That is minimum of oxygen, and then with the enzyme that stay in similar in luwak stomach, like that. And then I spread again. I sell the coffee to my Q-grader classmate, and then they help me to cup it, and then they help me to develop again. And start this April in Portland Specialty Coffee Expo, we launched this coffee luwak, and then we have many appreciate from the exhibitor and visitor.
So it, when you took the coffee to Portland, you had positive response. People were
very positive.
That's excellent.
After I come back from Portland, the UC Davis in California, they had the research of the coffee come to Indonesia, and they copied the coffee with us. And then the University of Indonesia has a collaboration with UC Davis to continue this research. So we would like to share this finding to the world, because we would like everyone who want to enjoy the luwak more hygienist, more healthy, more halal, and more honestly, there is no fake luwak anymore. Mm-hmm. There is no animal abuse anymore. Let luwak life free, and we drink kopi luwak without luwak. And you know, the kopi luwak is 60% decrease the caffeine. It's tested on the lab.
60% caffeine reduction just by having this enzyme process.
Yes.
Okay, that's also interesting. I want to try that coffee, because I also feel like I get very jittery. So I'm always looking for lower caffeine options.
I bring the coffee for you.
So the other thing I wanted to ask you about is, we have in this FTC 23 participants.
Yeah.
And you are the only woman who was able to come. Did that surprise you?
Yes, but a little bit yes. But because maybe, in West Java, especially there's no much woman coffee producer. But it's interesting because I have learned a lot the fermentation class with Lisa and Leo, and then learn in QP class too. And then I told to you in the class and to everybody that your class is bring me to another view of fermentation, but give me a huge of confidence about my process. I become a confidence. I have a right argument, and I have a right reason why I doing this fermentation.
Mm-hmm.
And I can tell to my buyer, I can tell to my community, what we're doing is more better and more in the right way.
Right, so you're able to explain what you're doing. So what I noticed from our conversations and all of the sessions that we had together is, you already had a really good foundation, you had good practices, but maybe you didn't know how to defend them. You're like,
yes,
I think this is a good idea, but I'm not sure why, but I know it's a good idea.
Yes.
And now you have the knowledge.
Yes.
Why it's a good idea. So I was surprised when you said that now, after being in this this workshop, that there are some things that you are going to change, or there are some things that you're going to take. Because I thought you were doing everything really well. So what's an example of something that you were doing that now you think you're going to do differently?
First, in anaerobic perception. My perception, anaerobic is my cover type, and then the range of the lid and the surface just 10 centimeters, and then with one way pulp, and then with everything that I learned before. But when I saw you in the hands-on, it's more practice, it more makes sense, and it's more can measure for me, and it's more pleasant. Because my duty as a leader in the community, I must be make simple my step. That's correct. That's you say that more step, more risk of the defect.
Mm-hmm.
So first in that, only lead, only the anaerobic. After that, the perception about the bricks. Yes, about the brick, because...
So you thought higher bricks was better, more...
Yes, I thought the high brick is better for natural, and then the lower brick is making worse coffee or something, so underestimate.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's become spread to the marketing narrative, to the explain to the buyer, and to the buyer perception. So buyer asked me, "Hey, Rani, what time brick for your natural coffee?" When I told them 20, they happy, but when I told them 15, oh, you must find some farm that have a 20 brick like that.
But so your buyers were pressuring you to have higher bricks?
Yes. Pressure me, and then he want to prove to me, well, can you send a photo? Or they come to my farm and measure the brick. Fortunately, good for me, my farm is brick is 20 brick. But I don't know when up to 28 that become a stress copy. I just, that makes sense. And you know, I never measure the brick of the coffee leaf.
Yeah, we're going to start measuring the bricks of the coffee leaves. Yeah, that's something else we talked about.
So the fermentation and the brick, and then the concentration of salt, and then there was submerged or dry or submerged, mix or not.
Mm-hmm.
You very understand how you treat the microbes. So I think all the processor who doing fermentation must be understand what microbes needed.
Mm-hmm.
They need move or no, they need warm or cold, they need mixed or no, yeah, like that. So the way you explain to us is make us understand, not make us remember different.
Mm-hmm.
Remember the material and understand the way you think, the way you think about this is more good.
Right. I don't want you to copy and just, you know, mimic it.
Yes.
I want you to know how to think about it.
Yes.
So, and another thing that came up during our workshop and our sessions was, because we're in Indonesia, the concept of wet hulling coffee.
Mm-mm.
So do you do any wet hulled coffee?
Because I'm a small business processing with a lot of investment in the buy a land for washing station, buy a machinery, buy everything. I learned about killing basah or wet hull in Lisa and Leo with Michael Yasin. I know the killing basah is cool. It have a unique flavor. If I make killing basah, I confident I can make a good one giling basa, not the giling basa with the earthy, with the baggy and everything. But I produce depend or order on order. But the difficult, the problem is the perception of the buyer for the giling basa price is must be cheap. So it must take need the time and need education for the buyer. If you want the good giling basah made by me, so the price can be cheap, because there is many steps to control the process, to control the fungi, to control everything, to control the drying and everything. It need education. It need more time.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know when the coffee wash coffee is must be cheaper than honey or must be cheaper than another experimental process. I think in specialty coffee, now the price is better because they communicate with the buyers, because we educate, and because the buyer now more educated from the coffee knowledge. Most of buyer that he is a key processor also, he is a key grader also. So they more can be discussed about everything with us. More equal when discuss about everything in processing and pricing and everything.
So you don't have a standard protocol that's a wet hold. If somebody asks for it, you're willing to do it, but it's not something that you do normally.
I have standard. I have standard, but I'm not always doing the wet hold.
Mm-hmm.
Because for me, there is another gen to do it, like fulfill some order and everything. You know, year to year, my production must be increased. So I must balance how to balance again the SOP, the standard operation mm-hmm. procedure. Yeah, we have three harvests we doing with wet hulling.
Okay,
specialty wet hulling. So I a little bit appeal in the class that if you want the specialty wet hull, why you ferment with 10 days, I think, like this.
But you were kind of critical of that label of specialty wet hulled, right? It's kind of a contradiction, because if wet hulling is supposed to be a fast, like lower production time, faster turnover, it's supposed to be more of a commercial style. But then if you're slapping specialty on top of it, and now you're making it harder and more expensive, it doesn't really make sense. It's a really, right? Is that your opinion?
Correct.
So specialty wet hold is a little bit.
It'll be funny, I think.
A little bit funny, absolutely. I'm trying to think, is there anything else that you wanted to talk about before we wrap up? Anything else you wanted to share or say?
Yeah, I would like to share to coffee producer or woman coffee industry in all of the world. We need more study. We need more knowledge about this coffee. We need more calibration about the perception about the coffee industry. Wherever you stand, even in the coffee owner, farm, processing, roaster, and everything, we need to calibration our perception to increase your confidence about how you do daily activity in this coffee industry. As me, now, I'm more confident because the substance of this class is discussed with you as a practitioner, as an expert, not only as a lecturer who has a certificate or who has a license. It's different. You have a wide view and you have a lot of point of view. So I have a lot of shortcut to continue my activity in coffee industry.
Well, thank you for sharing that.
Fermentation.
That makes me the happiest. My goal for the workshop is for producers to leave feeling more confident, because you didn't just learn some things that, you know, some best practices. You learned how to think.
Yes.
You learned how to ask questions. And then the world is more open.
Yes.
Thank you so much for chatting with
me. Thank you so much, Lucia.
Thank you for coming.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thanks to you for listening to this conversation. Isn't Ronnie just the coolest? I love how she challenged the traditional convention of planting coffee away up in the mountains, meaning that type of work had to be traditionally male work. And then she encouraged women to plant coffee near their homes so they no longer had to leave the home to be able to tend it, and they could take care of their typical home tasks and have an additional income source. I love how she went to their homes and one by one recruited the women of her village to consider working for her for just a few hours, whatever they could spare. She gave them flexibility. She made it possible for them to participate without having to completely give up their current responsibilities. I love that she had 100 1-gallon fermentations so that she could methodically test different processing strategies, and that she measured everything. I love that she took her waste and turned it into additional revenue streams. She pushed back against the pressure to make cascara tea and came up with something better. She also pushed back against the pressure to keep increasing the bricks. During FTC, we talk about the uselessness and the potential harm of chasing high bricks cherry. And we talk about how high bricks can lead to lower quality coffee. But you might have caught her mentioning measuring the bricks of leaves. This is something I fully support. It's not a topic to go in now, but I just wanted to clarify that measuring the bricks of leaves can give you more meaningful information than measuring the bricks of coffee cherry. And she mentioned a lot of other things that I would love to go into. For example, the anaerobic microbes that live in our gut. That's one of the things that we talk about in FTC. And this understanding of an actual anaerobic environment and anaerobic microbes can lead to things like processing civet coffee without using actual animals, without civets. Civet coffee without civets. She also mentioned a little bit later about changing the way that she's fermenting her tanks. The anaerobic, in the way that I teach in the class, involves a lot less equipment. And that's something that she was doing before that she's changing later. So there's a lot of topics that come from this episode that I really want to dig into. For example, all of the wet hulling that she mentions briefly at the end, I think that deserves a lot more airtime. But I really wanted today's conversation to be, you know, for you to meet Ronnie. And these topics will blossom in future episodes. So that's it for now. Another thanks to the patrons who make it possible for me to make new episodes. If you want to join our coffee community and join the Office Hours Lives to ask me questions or connect with other awesome listeners, go to patreon.com/makingcoffee. If you see coffee in a different way after listening to the episodes, consider joining Patreon and helping me make more. If you enjoy listening and get value out of these episodes, please share with a friend who loves coffee or wine. If you want to be notified when the next one is coming out, consider subscribing to my free newsletter at luxia.coffee. Luxia is L-U-X-I-A. Thanks for listening, and remember, life's too short to drink bad coffee.